Okay. I will just re-examine some issues I know we raised in, years, before. But aim based medrash bel chiddush is always a new angle on everything. The we have historical sources that the Yevonim outlawed. They banned Kiddush HaChodesh. Right? They outlawed us having a calendar, right? And Bris Mila and Shabbos. Right? And the but there's something else that as far as I know, these the sources for these three things are in the, what we call in the Sforim Chitzonim, things that didn't make it. They're not part of the canon. It's like Megillas Antiochus and things like that. But no one disputes the historical accuracy of it. But it's not in the same category as what's by us the canon, like the Midrashim and things that are, and our Midrashim say something different. Not to the exclusion of what's written there, and it's a Medrash Rabbah and Parshas Bereishis that the Tov, Avo, Choshech, and Tahom are these the four deficiencies that there were in the world before our culture created light. So refer to the four galuyos, of Tohu, Bavel, Vohu, Paras and Madai. Choshech is Yavon, right? Darkness is Yavon. And the Medrash over there says, She'eshricha einem shiso b'gzero seha. It's called darkness because they made it dark in our eyes. They darkened our eyes with their gzeros, which was, and the Medrash says, She'omolem kisfu al keren hasho in lachem chelek b'lokei Yisrael. We were commanded by them to engrave on the horn of an ox. We have no chelek in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what, that's what the Medrash brings down. It's particularly for that, particular gzera, which seemingly is harmless to our person. Mm-hmm. That's just called choshech. They're called darkness. They darkened us, they darkened our eyes with that particular gzera. Right? So it's not to, in any way, to take away from the fact that they also legislated against these three mitzvahs. And we have to say that thing of that symbolic act of engraving on the horn of an ox. We have no chelek in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's called they darkened us. as we mentioned in years prior to this one, the lashon of the most tzur. They say Ufortzu Chomos Migdalai Vetimu Kol Hashmanim. They breached, right, the walls of our towers, right, and then they defiled the oil. Right? They breached, and that also finds its way into the Gemara. The Gemara says that there was a fence around Har Habayis called the Sorag. It had like an outer fence, and the Yevonim breached 13 breaches, and when the Hashmonaim took control and they closed up, those breaches, they instituted a halacha that whenever a person finds himself, in where there used to be that breach, he had to bow. So he had to be mishtachaveh, wherever there used to be a pirza, wherever there, they did some damage, and that fence wasn't even part of the base of Midrash. It was an outer perimeter fence. And because of, they made 13 breaches, right? So Chazal instituted, whenever a Jew, so long as the base measure was standing, if a Jew found himself opposite that place where there used to be a hole in the fence, he had to bow. Right? Right. So the. Again, this idea that the. The idea of breaking in, that seems to be something big, break in, it's ufartu, the pirtus that they made, right? This is not our first encounter with the Greek culture. The Greek Empire split into two after Alexander the Great died. Right, there was the Egyptian Greeks and the Syrian Greeks, mm-hmm. Right? We had an encounter, with the Egyptian Greeks some, 60, 100 years earlier. There's the story of Ptolemy Amelch, that's the, Egyptian Greek Empire. right, some some 60-100 years earlier, to the story of Hanukkah, that demanded that the Torah be translated into Greek. So something very interesting, Chazal say, whenever they talk about that story, so they say they had to change 13 things for Talmi. No, as you know, first of all, instead of Bereshis Bara Elokim, Elokim Bara Bereshis, so you shouldn't think that there was a deity called Bereshis that created God, right? Well, and then, just another example, it says also in Parshas Bereshis that Vayichal Bayom HaShiv, God finished on the seventh day and he also rested on the day. Well, if he finished on the seventh day, he was working on Shabbos. So he changed it to Vayichal Bayom HaShishi, Vayishbos Bayom HaShvi, right? He finished on Friday and he finished on Friday and he rested on the seventh day. Right, 13 things they changed for him. Right, so, and 60 years later, right, the Greeks breached in, the Syrian Greeks breached in 13 places. In that Sorag that we mentioned, that surrounding outer perimeter fence, they broke in 13 places. Right. So. Can't be a coincidence. When the Torah was translated to Greek, they made 13 changes. And then and that was considered to be a bad thing. We're not, it's one of the things that we fast for on Asar B'Tevis was the Targum HaShivim. So the, 13 things had to be changed for Talmi HaMelech. And then 60 years later or so, the Syrian Greeks break into the Beis HaMikdash in 13 places. Interesting, 13 is Gematria Echad. But there's another thing that it says about that translation of the Torah into Greek. There's a Lashon Maseches Sofrim. The Maseches Sofrim says it actually happened twice, this translation episode with Talmi HaMelech. And one of those episodes, it says, Hoya Oso Yom Kosher Ki Yom Shenase HaEgel. That day that the Torah was translated into Greek was a severe calamity to Jews, like the making of the golden calf. Right. And now, and that's so flash, flash forward, right, to the Syrian Greeks. Now, everyone agrees that what they meant was Kisfu al Keren Ashor in Lechem Chelk Belkei Yisrael, that Gzeira of engraving on the horn of an ox, you have no chelik in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was to remind us of the Cheda Ego. Right? That the Maral and all the Mefarshim say, it's like, sticking in our face that we. So it's very interesting. The Targum HaShivim, done with the Egyptian Greeks, was a Yom Koshek, Yom Shenase Bo Ego. And then the Syrian Greeks tell us, 60, 70 years later, Kisu HaKeren Ashor Enchem Chelek Belkei Yisrael. For the Egyptian Greeks, we had to change 13 things when we translated Torah for them. Right? By the Syrian Greeks, they breached the Beis HaMikdash in 13 places. That's something very interesting too. It cannot be a coincidence, anyone should automatically be thinking that Hanukkah is somehow, which happened later in history, somehow a tikkun for what happened earlier in history. Meaning, initially, because of what happened early in history, that's what gave the Syrian Greeks the power to breach the Beis HaMikdash in 13 places. Right? And of course, the way we drove them out was, to a certain degree, some measure of the tikkun for what happened with the Targum HaShivim. Now, the truth is, people don't maybe not be aware of the tremendous damage that was done to us historically. The Targum HaShivim became the basis of Christianity and Islam. That's how the Bible went out to the Gentile world and they're able to play with it. Now, if not for that, then it wouldn't be Christianity, it wouldn't be Islam. That's how the... That's what the early Christians used. They used the Septuagint. They used the Targum HaShivim. That's what they worked with. It's not.
But they knew Hebrew. The early Christians.
They're very, very early ones. So then, when they went public, to the Gentile world, they were using the Targum HaShivim. When they became big, they started working with that. We really suffer from it greatly. With that historical context, it's not hard to understand that it was like Avodah Zorah, like the Yom Shenase Bo Ego, says that it empowered Avodah Zorah. But prior to that, in the direct correlation, between what happened, just less than a century apart. With the story with the Egyptian Greeks and the Syrian Greeks, these parallels that we pointed out. Right, the idea is that the there's a let's say the location of the Beis HaMikdash, and that's Kodesh, right, and that the surrounding area is Chol, right, that geographical difference also is a living metaphor for also the hierarchy of ideas. As you know, Kodesh and Chol, these are concepts, right? That's the big mila of Eretz Yisrael, called the Holy Land, is that the land actually plays out, it's the land itself, exhibits ideas that we believe in, things that in Chutz La'aretz we just believe in, you can actually see in Israel. That's the secret of what Chazal say, and we're going to talk about this more today, right? That Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden space opens up from nowhere. The Gemara says in Gittin that when the Romans destroyed Tur Malka, it's one of the big things that we mourn on Tisha B'Av. Aside from Beis HaMikdash, there's another two big towns that we mourn on Tisha B'Av: Tur Malka and Beitar. Now these are the three big tragedies the Gemara talks about in the Sugyas on Churban Abayis. It says Tur Malka had an astronomical amount of people, like 600,000, like cities. It's like huge. If you do the math, it's astronomical number of people there. So one of the Amoraim, who lives at the time when they're compiling the Gemara, says, I visited there. You couldn't even fit 600,000 reeds there. You're right. So it's ridiculous. It's impossible. So the Gemara says that that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi, right, the land of the deer. That's an interesting phenomenon, that if you'd ever skin a deer and then now try to reconstruct it, you won't be able to wrap the skin around its flesh. Now, when the deer is alive, it's an amazing thing that it's very tight-skinned. But if you'd kill the deer and you flay it, and then try to, reconstruct it, you won't be able to fit the skin around the flesh. So Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaTzvi. When it's alive, when the Jewish people are there, right, it miraculously more space opens up that you can't explain, right? And this that happens, when Am Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael en masse, we had this type of thing in the Beis HaMikdash, that Chazal say that, we bring this in the Mishnah and Avos, one of the ten Nisim that happened, on Yom Kippur, so people were crowded in there like sardines. But omdim tzvufim u'mishtachavim revachim. When they stand crowded, but when you bow, it was like spacious. When you bowed, it was spacious. Now when you spread out, all over, there was plenty of room. When you stood, that's when it was tight. And then there was something that happened perpetually in the first temple period, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Gemara says, ha'aron eino min amida. Right, that the aron, when it was there with the wingspan of the kruvim, it was mathematically impossible for the thing to fit. Right, the room wasn't big enough to contain it, unless you say that the actual amma by amma of the Aron didn't take up space. Well, there's no way it could fit in there. That is, an amazing thing that the land of Israel in general, when Am Yisrael is there en masse, but the Beis HaMikdash in particular, right, is where there's things that can't be explained scientifically. Right, and the truth is that as we said, Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz HaChaim, the land of life. It's things happen there that play out things that we believe in. In Chutz La'aretz, we take it on faith. In Eretz Yisrael, you actually come and see these things happen. Right, the idea. That's, by the way, I once saw in a sefer Orach Chochma from a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. So that's why it's Chutz La'aretz called Chutz La'aretz Mlashon Chetzi. It's only half a land. Right, because it's only the earthly dimension without the heavenly dimension. So it's chetzi, chutz, mlashon chetzi. It's only half of reality outside of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you have the physical dimensions and the spiritual dimensions, and then there's an interface, and that's the secret of pockets of space that open up. Right. So Eretz Yisrael being a living land that plays out ideas, things that outside of Eretz Yisrael we just have on faith, and it's just a matter of philosophy, over there things play out. So it's saying that the perimeter of the Beis HaMikdash and the outside of it represent, these things represent the ideas of faith and reason. It's actually being played out in spatially, right? That physics as we know it, right, everything, you know, that goes on outside of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, we're in the area that we call Chol. That's where you have regular life. You know, where the Shechina is, you know, hidden. You know, so you have the regular natural laws, right? And then, you know, you come to the Beis HaMikdash, and, you know, you have the Asar Nisim, you know, the 10 miracles that happen there all the time. And it's not just, and sometimes some types of miracles that defy the mind, in the sense that there's a difference between the impossible and the absurd. Now, the impossible means that, you know, me and you can't do it, but if you had enough strength, you could, right? Like, let's say, for example, Kriyas Yamsuf. You know, me and you, we can't split the sea. But if we have a bomb that's big enough, you know, for a second, we could split the sea. So that's the type of miracle that's called impossible. When you talk about that, when they were standing, it was crowded. But when they bowed, it was spacious. That's not impossible. That's absurd. That makes no, there's no way. It's not that you need more strength. You don't need more strength. It just, there's no way to explain it. There's just no way to explain it. It's not an issue of, you know, Kriya Shamsa, we could calculate on a calculator how much strength you need to part the water, a big enough explosion. This is not an issue of that, you know, just calculate that, you know, me and you can't do it, but someone who's strong enough can. It's just something that defies the mind, right? Math, just the math, the numbers don't add up. The numbers don't work, right? And they had that in the Beis HaMikdash. They had that in the Kodesh HaKadoshim perpetually, right? So if a person, Chazal talk about that, you know, even the Kohen Gadol, if he was unworthy, and he went into the Beis HaMikdash, you know, Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would drop dead there. Right? So it's not hard to understand. You, if you're not on the right level and you go in there and you know, you're going to see something that's going to drive you mad. Right? You're going to see how the, Kodesh HaKadoshim just doesn't, you won't be able to reconcile how the arm fits there. Right? Your brain fries. It's just not, that's why it's that explains what Chazal tell us. You know, Chazal ask a steer in Psukim. That, you know, it says, Chodom lo yebo omoid. No one should be, no human being, lo chol adam, lo yebo omoid, when Aaron goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara asks, well, Aaron's an adam, so chol adam should include Aaron himself. It says, no. Because at the time that Aaron went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's not a human being. He's a malach. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're not superhuman, you can't reconcile the experience. You know, it is certainly true by the first temple period where they had the Aaron there. Right? Which it actually is a clue, you know, to something interesting that we're told in the story of Chanukah. This makes it in the Gemara that the Pach Shemen that he found was Bechosama Shel Kohen Gadol. Had the stamp of the Kohen Gadol, had the seal, that's what I knew was closed, it wasn't touched. Now, that's not the halacha in the sense that you don't need the heksher of the Kohen Gadol for the oil of the menorah, you know, to be kosher for the menorah. All right, it happens to be that's what they found, right? But when they sent, you know, people to Tekoa, right, to press new oil for the menorah, you know, which was, that's why it needed to burn 8 days, because it's a 4-day journey each direction to Tekoa, where they brought the oil from. They don't have to send the Kohen Gadol there to supervise the pressing of any kosher Jew, any mashgiach, that it was handled properly, it didn't, you know, get tainted. Right? That's good, you know. You know, so what does it mean that they found, you know, there's something being said over here that the jug of the front was munach b'chosamo shel Kohen Gadol, it had his stamp, dafka, the Kohen Gadol that goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's something very interesting. We never find that the Greeks ever made it to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's it. The Lashon Chazal is Kishiz Nechasu Yevonim LaHechal. They came into the Hechal. Right, that's where, you know, we have the Mizbeach and the Menorah. You know, Mizbeach HaKtaris, you know, and the Menorah and the Shulchan. Never mentions that they went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's very interesting. You know, and the Maral talks about this. That, you know, Hechal, you know, is Gematria 65. Yavon is 66, right?
Right.
Right. So they were able to overcome the Hechel, he says. But says the Maharal, you know, Kohen, right, the Kohanim, you know, that took up the fight against the, you know, which is another question we should have opened up with. You know, where were the Sanhedrin in all this? You know, the fight was taken up by the Kohanim, the Hashmonaim, you know, good people. They weren't necessarily the Gdolei Ador. This is the time of, you know, the Zugus, Yossi ben Yoezer, Yossi ben Yochanan, Yeshua ben Parchia, Nitai Har Bailey. This was their their tkufa. Where were they in this old, you know, presumably with the Chashmonaim, but the Chashmonaim were the ones who took up the fight. Right? So the Maharal says something very interesting. We're going to get into this a little bit deeper. It says, you take the gematria of Kohen is 75. Right? So Hechol is 65. Right? Yovan is 66. They're up by one. And that's how they could take the Hechol. Kohen is 75. So it says the Maharal something very interesting, and which we want to elaborate on. As, you know, what is the 75 of coin? That's 10 more than Heichal, right? He says that refers to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that extra 10. Like Kaidua, 10 is the number of holiness. Wherever there's 10 Jews, the Shechina's there. That's why when there's 10 Jews, we could say Dvorim Shebekdusha, it's called. The things that require a minion, that you can't say, you know, like Kaddish, like Kedusha, Kaddish, Kedusha. Dvorim Shebekdusha. You need 10 Jews because that's where the Shechina dwells. Where there's 10 Jews. That's Kedusha. That's the number 10. Right? And that's so it says about something very interesting. The Kohen that could, you know, amongst them, there could be a Kohen Gadol that could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it says the Maharal, the Kohen could awaken the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and extend it back to the Heichal. And that's how they ejected the Yevonim. The Yevonim could control the Heichal. They couldn't control the Kodesh Kedoshim. The Kohen, who has the extra 10 on top of Heichal, could, you know, he awakens the Kedusha of the Kodesh Kedoshim, infuses it into the Heichal, and that's what caused the ejection of the Yevonim from the Heichal. And he says it's alluded to in the word Heichal. The way you spell the word Heichal is He Yud Chaf Lamed. Right? But you know, you didn't need that yud there. Why? Because you could also, you know, spell it with just without that yud and just put a tseri, right, under the hey, chol. It'll sound the same. It'll sound the same. Right? And he says, indeed, lefida masort, that's the nikud that's under the hey, is a tseri. Right? And we have the yud anyway. We have the yud anyway. So he says there's a hidden yud there. Because there's the phonetic yud of the sound of the tsere, in addition to the yud that's written, that alludes to there's the hiddenly the kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim permeates the heichal. So even though in halacha the kedusha is not the same, the kohanim could go into heichal, but they can't go to Kodesh HaKadoshim. But in a hidden way, there's the hidden yud, the kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim permeates the heichal in a hidden way. The kohanim awaken that. And that's what caused the ejection of the Greeks. Right, to go a little bit deeper into what the Maharal is saying, right, is that the Greeks developed secular culture, which could be all good and well. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. That could be all good and well, but one thing's for sure, right? You know, the human mind and the things that the human mind could develop, they stop somewhere, right? The human mind cannot figure out everything. There's certain things that just, we have it now in our day and age, we have the quantum physics that they're still trying to explain, and the explanations are always changing. Certain things that, we tried, they explain it this way, but then they find some readings that's inconsistent, they revise. And there's certain things, and that's even in physical reality, let alone if there's higher realities, like the things, the issues of the spirit. They're just from higher dimensions, just from a higher point in reality. You know, and the mind knows, you know, the three dimensions that we live in, and there's higher dimensions. Right? And the separate space, you know, that spatially in Eretz Yisrael, right, Chol is outside of Har HaBayis, and then it becomes in levels, like levels of Kedusha. You know, Kedusha's Har HaBayis, right? The Azara, the Heichol, the Kodesh HaKadoshim. All these things are playing out a concept of the idea of how far human reason could reach, Chol, right? And then there are some things that you could reach with divine assistance, and then there are certain things that are even beyond that, certainly beyond that, and there are certain things where, human mind just doesn't reach there, period. Just period, right? And that's the end of a Kodesh HaKadoshim, holiest of the holies. Right? So it's even with divine assistance, there's always going to be something that's over your head, right? Which is where faith comes in, emunah, right? And so it's between emuna and das. Now, what's over our head, we still have a connection to that. So that's where faith comes in, right? To be, you know, that's where you need faith. In times of confusion, the situation's over your head, right? And there's, you know, faith is a real connection to what you can't, you know, wrap your head around, right? And so, yeah, and so the space of Eretz Yisrael played out this metaphor of, you know, the different limits of where the human mind can reach, right? There's like what it could reach naturally, that's Chol. And there's what it could reach if you work hard or if you have divine assistance, and that's the idea of the different levels of Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. And then there's, you know, the Kersha Kedushin. That's God's domain, period. Just like God is unknowable, Kersha Kedushin represents it. You know, God is Be'etzem unknowable. Even angels don't know God, you know, his essence, right? And then that's what's portrayed by the Kersha Kedushin. This spatial, you know, delineation of Kedushas HaRabayis, you know, versus in, versus out, is playing out an idea of where your reason reaches and where, what I, you know, reason needs now divine assistance. And then there's where reason doesn't reach at all. It's all faith. So what it means that, you know, the Yevarim did break-in entries, right? They're making a statement, just like Eretz Yisrael, you know, plays out a concept, you know, the space of Eretz Yisrael, the space of Har HaBayis versus, you know, what's outside of it is the idea of reason and faith, right? And what at one point, you know, reason, you know, drops out and faith has to take over. Right? They broke in. Broken entry means they were making a statement. Our reason could handle and solve all of life's questions. That's what it means. Ufartzu chamos migdolai. Right? And they broke in over there. And now that's a break-in entry, right? They're trespassing. Right? And they could reach up to the Heichal, right? Because and what that represents is that there's a certain amount of questions in life that philosophy could offer a solution to. It might not be the real solution, right? But it might sound good. Might sound good also. That's what it means. They could reach up to the Heichal. You know, they could offer secular substitutes for a certain amount of Torah ideas, right? But it all ends before the Kersha Kedushin. They can't get past that, right? That's, I was like, you know, they were somehow oblivious to that area, right? Now, what it means that, you know, the jug of oil had the stamp of the Kohen Gadol, who does go into the Kersha Kedushin. And so it means that's why that oil was, as it were, beyond their reach. That oil was like from the beyond, right? It's the stamp of the Kohen Gadol who goes into the Kersha Kedushin, right? Stamped it out. I mean, that's why they missed it. They were Timu Koshmanim. Somehow they missed this one. They were oblivious. They couldn't see it. I was oblivious to it because it had the power that's beyond where human reasoning can't even produce a counterfeit for. So certain things that human reasoning, so it's all called, when they broke the higher bias, the whole thing is trespassing, right? But there's trespassing. There's trespassing where you could offer a secular alternative. It's not the real thing, but you can fool people into thinking it's adequate. Right? And then there's certain things that there is no alternative, you know. The Torah, you know, talks about ideas, and there is no secular equivalent. Right? Their trespassing was, you know, as far as said there could be a secular alternative, right, to something that the Torah says. Right? And the Kersha Kedushin is where they ran out of steam. They couldn't get past that. Now, their power to penetrate, you know, comes from the fact that a generation earlier, you know, the Torah, you know, the boundaries between in and out were blurred, right? Because the Torah that was strictly in the Jewish domain, right? And that's what, you know, kept us, keeping our Torah, you know, within our confines is what kept our, secured our borders, as it were, right? The Torah went out to the Gentile world, right? Right, and that gave them like a certain foothold, you know, and that was part of the cosmic damage done, right? That, you know, now they have a certain foothold in our Torah, even if it's a corrupt one. And as a response for the, you know, we had to change 13 things for them. Connected each one of those changes, they were able to break in. There's 13 breaches, connected 13 changes, because we ourselves, you know, because we submitted to the demands of time, we blurred the boundaries. A clear boundaries of where reason goes and where faith has to take over, right? And we blurred those boundaries by putting the Torah out to the Greeks. So now the Greeks could break in, break it. That's, so now, it's not a coincidence that you know the amount of things they had to change, right? And the and then subsequently the breaches that were made were 13, right? 13 is gematria echad. So the because when the Torah was strictly in our confines, right? So there was a perfect reconciliation and unity between reason and faith. It's a pretty natural progression. They understand, you know, you figure out and you do whatever you can do. And then at the point, you know, we can't, rebar some, you take over. No, there's nothing. Now, the idea that reason and faith are contradictory is not true. That's a secular perspective on what reason is and what faith is. Truth is, you know, by us, it's like the road going to the Beis HaMikdash. Reason. Over here, okay, from here, faith takes over. There's the things that you get your head around and things you can't get your head around. And it's just a continuum. You know, you go from this one to that one. Right? It's one road. And that's things that I can understand, things I can't understand. What's that famous poem? You know, Lord, give me the power to, you know, do what I can and, right, accept what I can't and the good sense to know the difference. That's all. Right? That's it. You know, the third things in life, you know what it's like? It's no different than the daily cycle. The daily cycle of night, day, right? Day, time of clarity, night, time of confusion. So I'd say, l'hagid ba'boker chastecha, v'munoscha ba'leilos. It's life, you know. It's life itself, things that you could and things. And, you know, the amazing thing is that, is that there's actually a interrelationship, you know, and called a symbiosis between reason and faith. You know, yesterday's faith could be today's reason, mm-hmm. right? You know, things that yesterday was a mystery. You know, today it's understood. And then you move on to the new things that you don't understand. And, you know, like the daily cycle, you know, go through. You know, the Zohar says this. Resha chashocha hadon aura, that's the way life goes. You're in darkness, and if you just hang tight, you'll be, you know, you have clarity, and then, you know, and then the goalpost moves. Right, the goalpost moves. No, and it's a journey, and it's a continuum. It's a journey. The goalpost moves because the thing that you had to take on faith now you understand, and you just move the goalpost. You know, it's an endless journey, right? And that's what's great. That's because it's also, as we're going to explain, is where creativity comes from. Right, constantly moving the goalpost. You know that this you understand. That, you know that there's creative energy in that. That you know you discover new things, and now it's no longer a mystery. And since it's done in a way, right, that you know that the faith becomes reason, but you feel that the faith becomes reason because what was over your head, you would somehow got into your head, and now the goalposts move to a higher idea, on to the next challenge. Right? So if you live in that type of world, that I don't understand it today, but I might understand it tomorrow, so in that type of perspective of faith and reason being a process of constantly moving the goalposts. So when you do understand it, does it increase your Avas Hashem or does it decrease your Avas Hashem? Right. The Rambam wrote, you know, in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, you look at the Bria and you look at the Chochma, you're blown away. Right. So already I saw that, the Svarim, asked the question. I haven't seen a satisfactory answer, but I'll pose an answer today. Right, the Rambam, wrote that the more, and therefore he gives you, and his Hilchos Torah teaches you a crash course in the chemistry of the day, right? You should have more Avas Hashem. You understand that? Well, so I saw it Svamari as 200 years ago and onwards ponder the question, why is it that in the Rambam's day, the more science you knew, the more love of God you had, and this day and age, the more science, the scientists are the biggest apikorsim. They raise the question, they don't have a satisfactory answer. What changed? Yeah. What changed, right? So the question is, what changed is the whole general perspective. That's what changed, right? It was once understood, like I'm saying, and the Jewish perspective on faith and reason is that it's a continuum, right? You know, today's faith becomes tomorrow's reason, and then the goalpost moves, and there's tremendous joy and creativity and fulfillment in that journey, right? You know, the secular world has faith and reason as two contradictory forces, right? And that's, and it goes as far back as the Greeks. They thought that reason could solve all of life's problems, right? And like I say, with their philosophy, you know, their philosophy deals with a lot of parallel concerns that we talk about in Torah, right? And even issues that we discuss in Kabbalah, there are certain things in philosophy that run parallel. It's not the same, and it's not true. And that's the secret that they could break in up to the Heichel. Right? Because, you know, psychologists could offer counterfeit solutions to some truth, but only so far. In that, past that, they can't even do that. Right? All right, but they thought, you know, that reason could solve everything, right? And if that's true, they also, interesting, they cannot really accept the idea of a changing or evolving world, right? Because you're saying that your reasoning could calculate everything. Well, if the world's going to change, it's not going to be true anymore. It's not, right? So they understood, you know, back in their thinking that, you know, that the mind could calculate what is possible ad asof, right? Possible, and things are not going to change. If things could change tomorrow, that would be very bad news, right? Because it means everything you figured out is just true for the moment, right? So they didn't believe that the world could change, right? And, you know, so the... And if you take a look, you know, at what they legislated against, you know, we'll put Shabbos aside for the time being, because Shabbos is Kodesh. Shabbos, you know, the idea of Shabbos actually has to do with the Kodesh HaKodashim. Right? They didn't like what they can't get their head around, so we know Shabbos is Shabbos Kodesh. And it's connected to Kodesh HaKodashim, if you want to know... And so, you know, Shabbos is, you know, off the table because that's just, they just couldn't relate to it at all, right? You know, but they had a problem with bris milah. They had a problem with cosmetic surgery. They didn't, yeah. And calendar, you know, they had a lunisolar calendar just like ours. Do you know that? They had a lunisolar, it's not, people make a mistake. They think they outlawed Kiddush HaChodesh because they had a solar calendar. It's not true. Solar calendar started in Rome. They had a lunisolar calendar just like us. So what's wrong with, you know, Kiddush HaChodesh? Right? They had a problem with what these things represent, you know, which made them feel very uncomfortable. They asked, you know, Tunus Rufus HaRasha, asked Rabbi Akiva, he asked him, he wanted to trick him up, he asked him to trick what he thought would be a trap question. He asked him, Master Shalomi Noim Yoser, whose actions are better? You know, what God does or what man does? Right? It's a Medrash Rabbah in Parashas Tazria. Right? So Rabbi Kiva, without missing beat, said, what man does is better. He says, I'm shocked that a rabbi would talk that way. He says, I'll prove it to you. He says, you know, God makes wheat, we make cake. That's very interesting. So Tunus Rufus, you know, he was a bright guy, Tunus Rufus, and he figured out, you knew where I was going with this. You knew. You figured me out. Because I was expecting you to say what God does is better. Right? And therefore, I would counter, so why do you guys do Bris Milah? You know, God makes man in Orel, right? And you guys do Bris Milah. Why are you tampering with creation? Right? But you knew where I was going. You said, no, what man does is better, because we make cake. Right? That's something very, you know, something amazing to look into, right? But first and foremost, you know, is that they viewed Bris Milah, they understand the statement is that we're changing the world, we're altering it. They said, why don't you leave it the way God created? We're altering the world. Now, they had a big problem with that. They did not believe that the laws of nature change. Because if that would be true, then everything they calculated could be wrong tomorrow. That would be a serious setback. That's, I believe, you know, this is what math says, this is what logic says, this is what has to be. It has to be true even about God. You know, they figured they could also calculate what God can do or can't do. Which, interesting, the Rambam calls that, interesting, Lashon, Hit parts hamura, right? How they trespassed regarding God. They trespassed, Right, they, you know, same lotion used as how they broke into the Beis HaMikdash. You know, they thought that reason reaches everywhere. The reason as they know it. And the truth is, even the reason as they know it, you know, that they analyze the world, that's perpetually changing. It's for lack of a better word, you know, evolving. But evolving with the power of mitzvahs, we're changing the world. Right? So it starts with bris milah, how we alter things. Right? So now the Maharal points out, you know, very interesting, that the... The Medrash says that when, after, you know, Adam sinned, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kotz Vidarta, you know, I said, yeah, you're going to eat grass. You're going to grow thorns, you're going to eat grass. All right, so Adam Rishon broke out into sweat, and he said, Shema Aniva Chamori Nikshram Le'evus Achas, me and my donkey going to eat out of the same feedback. So when he heard, Bezeas Apecha Tochal Lechem, he calmed down. Right? We're going to eat bread. He calmed down, right? I'm not an animal. Right? If I'd be an animal, I'd be eating out of the same feedback as my donkey. Man eats bread. So the Maharal explains, right? Because bread, you know, there's technology in it. You know, you have to, you know, it's got a grind. There's process which is indicative of human intelligence. You know, you process the wheat and you make it. Exactly what Rabbi Akiva said, right? I'm not an animal. And therefore that's reflected even in the food that I ate. There is human intelligence in the food. Right? There is progress. I'm not an animal. Like, I'm not a creature of an animal. Like, right? That there's, you know, there is an idea of progress, right? You know, technological progress. But by us, it means something different than what it means by them, right? They also develop technology. Right? But by them, it's not about changing the world. It's about pursuing, you know, their natural desires. It's not about evolving. As it were, by them, the machines make progress, not the human beings. Every generation of machine is better. Right? You know, you go back to the dawn of time. Let me explain this. Right? The dawn of time, you know, so we find, you know, Parshas Bereishis, who invented technology, all technology, agriculture, architecture, metalwork, music, herding, all the B'nai Kayin, all the children of Kayin, you know, developed all of technology, you know, and then there was a setback with the marble, you know, and that humanity had to rebuild. But initially, you know, the guys who were like really running ahead technologically were all the children of Kayin. All right. So Rashi says right there on the spot, you know, based on Chazal, you know, it's, you know, well, you know why they were into metalwork, weapons, right? You know why they're into music and herding, manipulation, avodah zarah, right? It was, you know, it's not true what people say, that necessity is the mother of invention. That's not true. Passion is the mother of invention. You know, you have a passion, you want to fulfill it, you know, and that motivates the mind to get thinking. But it's really the yetzer, you know, the mind is lazy. The yetzer triggers it, and it was all their vices. Right, but here's the thing, they missed something. You know, they were into agriculture and they made all types of vessels, and they missed something very basic that only came 10 generations later, the plow. Who invented the plow? Noach. That's why they call him Noach, Rashi says. He's going to bring an alleviation for the cursed earth. He invented the plow. How did they miss the plow? How'd they miss it, right? They were into agriculture. It's one of the things they developed. They did metal work. How'd they miss the plow? How did that happen? Right? They weren't really interested in improving the world. If that's not on your agenda, if it's all about self-aggrandizement, you know, and fulfilling your passions, which means you basically stay the same person, and it's just about doing what you feel like. So you're not developing, and the world's not developing, right? The B'nai Sheis, right, that line of humanity didn't develop anything seemingly until came Noach, but he made the plow. So it's like very interesting about technology. A lot of things should have not been invented in the first place. They're not good for us. But there are certain things that are good for us. Right? So the B'nai Sheis weren't interested in all y'all because they weren't into war, so that's why they didn't develop metalwork. Right, they weren't into avodah zarah or manipulations. They didn't do herding or music, right? But they did want to fix the world, right? They want to make the world a better place, right? And, you know, be partners of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation. So they made the plow, and those guys who did a lot of technology missed it. They missed it because it wasn't part of their value system. Right? When the Torah was exclusively by Am Yisrael before it went out to the Greeks, right? So we had a tremendous unity, in our science, in our technology, and in our faith. It all worked in concert. We had the Torah only within our confines. We had a very, very unified echad, 13. We had a very unified way of thinking. Faith and reason, avodas Hashem, technology. It all worked in concert. If we would have our science, something which I just my Rebbe Roshiva Zichron Livracha Yaakov Weinberg told me years ago, which I only understood recently. He once told me they saw in Kabbalah Sforim that the concept of Shechinta Begalusa, that the divine presence is exile, an expression of that is that the Jews are not the biggest scientists in the world. That's what he said. That we are not the biggest in secular wisdom. That is called Shechinta Begalusa, the divine presence in exile. Many think that if the Rambam laments about this in a few places. Right, he said once upon a time we were a very wise nation and we had astronomy and we had physics and we had a lot of stuff that we lost. He says the people of the tribe of Yisachar were very big astronomers and mathematicians. He says that we had these books that we lost them all and now we have to use what the Greeks provide. We're stuck, Right. The idea is that our lives before the whole story of how the Torah went out of bounds, when we had it totally within our bounds, we had a very reconciled life of reason and faith. Where's the place of reason? Where's the place for faith? And the interplay between the two, like we said, yesterday's faith is today's reason, and the goalpost moves. And in that way, we also had our own type of science and technology that worked in concert. The more you understood, the more you appreciated the greatness of God. Because the whole framework was one that where everything, the faith and reason reconciled, not considered larger, that if I understand something, therefore I don't need God. It was understood that the more I understand, the more I appreciate God. And in that framework also, right, the there's a whole idea, different idea of technology. Right, the idea of technology was that the focus was to better ourselves and better the world. Right? They say necessity is the mother of invention. Not true. Invention is the mother of necessity, right? Because we invent these gadgets, right? Once we invent them, now we need them, right? Right? And it's crippling. Right? Yeah, but I don't care because it's all about making money. The guy who produces it wants to make money. He's not the tikkun olam. He's about to make money, right? And so they're developing a lot of things that are handicapping the human being, right? Not helping him, right? If Am Yisrael would be in charge of the development of technology, we'd only produce things that that make the world a better place without handicaps. Certain things would not be invented. We just have the knowledge how to, but we wouldn't because these products are not good for us, right? And we'd just focus on like the plow, like Noah and the plow, things that just make the world a better place, and make us better people, right? The Greeks didn't that they didn't believe that the world could change, and that's what Kiddush HaChodesh is about, right? They had a lunisolar calendar just like ours, right? But Kiddush HaChodesh is something else, right? Amongst the karbonos that we bring on Kiddush HaChodesh, right, is a seir chatas l'Hashem, right? It was one of the karbonos that has a din of a chatas, like a sin offering. And it's chatas l'Hashem, the pasuk says. And Chazal said to read that literally, chatas l'Hashem, God needs a kapara. Hashem says, haviu olai kapara, shemiat tiyaseyarech. Hashem says, I need atonement, as it were, for having mitigated the moon. Originally, the moon and the sun were the same size, right? And then the moon complained, and Kadosh Baruch Hu mitigated the moon. And so we learned about this in Derech Hashem. Right, the idea is that because the moon is mitigated, it created the world that we know, right? That that's why the world is exactly 50-50, half dark, half light, because in the future via Orlavana Karachama, the night's not going to be dark anymore, right? You won't need to sleep either. It's okay, right? It creates, as we learned in Derech Hashem, it creates the cosmic balance that we know, which is not perfect, of good and evil being equally weighed, because 12 hours dark, 12 hours light, right? But we are working against that. We're chipping away at that. And Kiddush HaChorish, every Kiddush HaChorish, of putting Kedusha into the moon, is building up energy for the eventual expansion of the moon to counter the Mir HaRech, which is going to change the whole cosmic balance, like we learned in Derech Hashem. That's why in the future is no Yetzirah. In the future, it's a perfect world, right? Because and that's all rooted in the idea of why the moon has been mitigated, create the world as we know today, and when the moon expands, right, it's going to be a perfect world. Interesting, there's a Zohar in Parshas Emor, when it talks about the, it's interesting to know, and should reinforce your emunah. You know, the Zohar and Parshas Emor, Emor is where you have the halacha that Kohanim Balei Mum are Pasul Avar, which seems very unfair. They were born that way. Right? So the Zohar says something very interesting. You know, there's a certain amount of people that, which really reflects on it, the Rambam writes in the Mar Nevuchim, says there are a certain amount of people that will be born with birth defects, says Zohar. It's natural. Ram Murray wrote this in Mar Vuchim, amazing, right? It is natural, genetic code's not perfect, it's not. And he says, and therefore, because that's the laws of nature that we have, a certain amount of people will be born with these birth deformities, right? Because that's the laws of nature, and God selects the souls that everyone that's, born deformed, that's his unique challenge in life, that's his unique pekel, it's his unique avot, it's his unique mission. And as the Mefarshim explained, it's an amazing thing. That's why a Kohen Baal Mum, interestingly enough, he can't do Avoda, but he can eat Kachim. He's allowed to eat Truma, all the benefits. All the benefits, which shows that he's not a bad person. If he'd be a bad person, he wouldn't be allowed to eat Truma either. No, Baal Mum's mutter, he has all the benefits of a Kohen. So you see, it's his challenge. It's not, doesn't mean he's a bad person.
A lefty's a Baal Mum.
Right, a lefty's a Baal Mum. Right. Right, so but says the Zohar like this, when the Kosho Bemilui Halavana, when Akash Baruch Hu is going to now make the moon as bright as the sun, at that point all the Balei Mumim get healed. That's what it all means. The world of nature is like this, that there's going to be X amount of birth defects per births, right? It's because of the mitigation of the moon. It makes the cosmic balance that we know today. It's all going to change. And he said, by Milui Halvana, when Hashem was destined to make the moon as big as the sun, all the people with birth defects get healed at that time. That's right. The mitigation of the moon gave us the world that we know. Right, that's why there's birth defects, and when there's not going to be anyone, that's all going to get their refuah. All the Balei Mumim get their refuah by Milui Halavana loss of level. And of course, they get paid for how they cope with their challenges in this world. Right? Kiddush HaChorish represents how we're changing the world. If the world could change, that means all their calculations are thrown off instantly. Right? They're not comfortable with that. Right? That means even reason is not true. Just like today's faith is tomorrow's reason, but together with that, change that what you took on faith, now you understand, but it could also be that yesterday's reason is outdated, right? Mm-hmm. They could not handle that, right? And that's what Kiddush HaChorish represents. The world is changing. We are changing the world, right? And altering the world, step by step, something that they can't. They can't compete with that, and they're not interested in competing with that. They're interested in capitalizing on what is, right? and that's what it means. That Rabbi Akiva likened Bris Milah to making bread, right? Which is man's, as it were, saving grace. We're in favor of progress. We're in favor of technological progression, but it has to be aligned with faith. And when it's aligned with faith, it takes on a whole different, whole different perspective, right? When it's aligned with faith, then it's all about wanting to change ourselves and change the world for the better, not capitalize, but change. All right. So, All right. So now the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that represents where their reason can't even reach. It's not they can't even offer a parallel to certain mysteries. There are certain mysteries in life that there are no solutions to propose. All right, but then there's the certain things that they offer counterfeit solutions to, and that's what it means they reached up to the Heichal. So now what the Maral says that that Pach Shemen was Munach Bechol Samal Shel Kohen Gadol means that it draws power from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why they were oblivious to it. Because it went beyond wherever they can even offer a counterfeit solution for. It's just you know, off the table of the things that they deal with, right? All right, so, and the Kohanim tap into that, and that's what ejected them. So that talks about, you know, the power that faith has in augmenting reasoning, right? So like we said, you know, yesterday's faith is today's reason, but also in that interface, you know, between reason and faith, that's what causes reason to evolve and change. Right, they said just like yesterday's faith, today's reason, but also means yesterday's reason, that no way to reconcile that also changed, and there's progress, and everything is evolving. Everything is evolving. Right, so now there's two ways to do this. Right, and with this we're drawing to a close. Right, there's two ways to do this. Right, and there's the holding tight. Right, if a person just keeps the faith, you know, when he has questions. You know, if he holds the faith long enough, he will discover answers. And the Tzar says, it's just like the natural cycle. Night, if you hold tight during the night, day comes. Day comes, right? You know, but people just sometimes give up. That's the problem. And, you know, and not giving up, right? Not giving up, right? So that's what the women did by the Chet HaEgel, right? The Chet HaEgel, why did it happen, right? They could not reconcile faith with reason. Very simple, right? Moshe Rabbeinu said 40 days. Vayarim ki boshesh, Moshe, he's late. So Chazal say, boshesh. These guys, wise guys, they calculated. They figured it's already 6 hours. It's chatzos, he's not back, he's not coming, right? Right, they lost the faith. They made the eagle, right? And the eagle's like that, you know, that break between reason and faith. Right, that it never occurred to them that they're wrong, right? And they have to take matters into their own hands. And, you know, as the Kuzri says, they wanted to, now if we have to take matters into our own hands, we have to reduce Judaism to make it more relatable. When you make something more relatable, are you making progress? No, you're the same idiot, right? You just diluted everything, right? And that's what annoys me so much, that Reform Judaism is called progressive Judaism. Where's the progress? Right? All right, to water down, you water down. Why are they called modern? Yeah, that's why I think it's horrible. They won the media war as if they're more, they call themselves modern, they call themselves progressive. Right? To water down something, to make it relatable means just the opposite. You're not making progress. You're staying where you are, and you're bringing it to you. Right? And that's what Chet HaEgel was, right? You know, instead of, you know, having the challenge to realign your reason with faith, which is actually, you know, to grow. You know, you have something which you have in reason, something in faith, and you're going to realign the reason with the faith. That's progress. That's progress. You change the way you're thinking, and you come up to new ideas, right? They failed, right? The women held tight. So what did they get? They got Rosh Chodesh, right? Mm. They got Rosh Chodesh, you know, Vemunoscha Balelos, right? But they got it because they held tight. But there's something else you could do. You know, when you're in darkness, you could wait till daybreak. You know, and that's, you know, you hold tight in Emunah until it gives way to Das. You know, just wait it out. Wait it out, things will work out. Wait it out, it'll make sense. Or you could do something else. You could light a candle. Light a candle, right, to illuminate the darkness. And that's another type of, response. You know, when we have confusion, that, you know, when the Rambam was confronted by certain questions, right, certain concerns, it made him productive, right? He produced the Mar Nevuchim, the Mishneh Torah, right? And that's the light of Torah Shebaal Peh, right? That when in the conflict between faith and reason comes creativity. I mean, if you process it, you deal with it correctly. You light a candle, right? And that's the union of the light of the menorah. That's why the Nes happened in the menorah. Menorah is the light that we generate. You know, the Torah itself is called light. Kiner mitzvah v'Torah or. So the, you know, Chazal say, and the Goyen brings it, Torah or refers to the Torah Shebichsav. That's natural light. That's natural light. You know, God gave light. But then there's the candlelight. That's the light that we generate. That's artificial light. That's man-made light. The Medrash is amazed that, you know, we light the light in the candles in the Beis HaMikdash, the Medrash in Parshas Baaloscha. So the Medrash over there says, you know, it's amazing. We give light to he who created light. What's the matter? So amazed by. We also give a carbon to the guy who created the animal, right? We pour sacraments to he who created wine. It's like amazed. They're amazed about the menorah. You give light to God who created light. Why is that different than anything? Whatever we give God, we're giving back something that he gave to us. No, this is different, right? Because light represents knowledge. Night represents reality itself. First thing, the first constructive thing God created was light. First was tova vo, the first thing making order from chaos was light. Velokim ye'or, right? You know, and that's the gift of the Torah Shebichsav. The gift of the Torah Shebaal Peh is that now we've internalized that light, and now we are producing light. And that's when we find creative solutions, you know. So if you hold tight, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself will bring daybreak. So if you want to rely, you know, but it's a Nisoyan, and you know, so you hang tight, day will come. And that's, as it were, the natural progression from, you know, faith to reason, that yesterday's faith becomes today's reason. That happens naturally, and the credit for the person that he hung tight, didn't give up. But there's a higher level, right? You create solutions. Light the candle. Don't wait till daybreak. You light the candle. That's the Torah Shebaal Peh, right? That, you know, that just the opposite, that the friction between faith and reason, creativity. Like Rabbi Kiva said, bris mila is like making cake. It's creative, right? And that's the that's the nace of Hanukkah. Right? Nace of Hanukkah is that we first of all we drove the Yevonim out, we restored the boundaries, we sealed up those breaches. Right? They broke the breaches between faith and reason in a destructive way. And that made like a breach between faith and reason. You want to say reason is everything, trying to supplant faith, which means you're making a permanent friction. To, we reinstated those walls. You know, reason up to here, from this point onwards, faith, and it's a continuum. Right? And you know, you have to, at one point in your journey, you have to at one point leave reason and go to faith, right? Which is a sliding scale. You know, and that's also illustrated by the sliding scale of the Kedusha. First, Kedusha's Arabais, Kedusha of the Azor, Kedusha of the Hechel. It's a sliding scale. But when they rebuilt those walls that the Yevonim breached, what did they institute? When you face that breach, you have to bow. There's an amazing lesson over there. Is that, you know, they wanted to continue straight in. You know, take reason where reason can't go. We say bow, that this line of thinking at this point bends over on itself. It can't continue. Right. It goes, you know, you've reached the outer limits of where reason could go, and that's where it folds over on itself. Right? It can't go past this point. That's what it means, that wherever there was a breach, they instituted bowing. Right? But we took it a step further. Right? That the that just like the Chashmonaim, you know, awakened the Kedusha of the Korosh HaKadoshim and brought it into the Heichal, right? With the area of the bring from the area called Kodesh, which it's beyond, and our only connection to it is through faith, because reason doesn't reach there. And our connection to it, verastichli be'emuna, is where they pulled that Kedusha into the Heichal, right? From the realm of faith, they brought energy into the realm of knowledge, and that's what ejected the Greeks. We continued that tikkun further. Right? And that's the that Chazal instituted, that we write Neros Chanukah, and we put that light by the doorway or by the window to shine out. Right? That the power of that, you know, from the power of Torah Shebaal Peh, which is where faith meets reason, right? To go, and we have to undo the damage they did, and we have to dafka put the power, the light of faith, right, into the realm of reason, right? You know, the realm of Kedusha into the realm of Chol, right? And that's the power of the Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's what sustains us. You know, it's our last nace in history. Is the Nes Chanukah. Now that's it. You know, 200 years later began this long and bitter Golus. And this was the Hachona that it was, that, you know, we're going to be exiled. We're going to go out of Eretz Yisrael. Right? Now they broke in only 200 years, we're going to be ejected out. Not only no base of measure, not even in the land of Israel. Right? And the Ner Chanukah was a preparation for that. Right? 200 years earlier, starting 200 years earlier until this day, that the light from that realm of where, which reaches faith, shines out to the realm of reason, the realm of Chol, the realm of where we're challenged by the Sitra Achra. And we draw strength from that. That's what's kept us going in the Golos for, you know, 2,000 years, that we've been out. We've been off our bounds. We've been off our turf. And we've been distanced, you know, not just from our land, but also conceptually, we've been distanced from, you know, the fountain of renewal of our faith that we used to get with Aliyah Larego. We've been, you know, distance conceptually, the Ner Chanukah is what keeps us going. The light shining out from the realm of faith into the realm of reason, and that's what kept us going. And the tikkun will be complete when once again, when we finally go back to Eretz Yisrael, and the reason and faith become fully synthesized, and we'll have, aside from our own Talmid Chaim, also our own science, our own medicine, and that's going to be the realm of Mashiach, as we call it, world peace. And yet the laws of physics don't change yet, till, later on, further down the line. But initially, there's world peace, and there's tranquility, and life is easy, right? that's when, everything that's earthly, chol, becomes integrated with the Kodesh, the reason with the faith. Just like, Noach discovered the plow, when the aura of Torah will now be synthesized with all the secular pursuits, and everything is going to be focused on just improving ourselves and improving the world, that will be the world of Melech HaMashiach. That's the utopia, the physical utopia, which will evolve very rapidly because it's now, everything is on track and everything is reconciled, everything only moving towards the Kodesh. That's why it will rapidly evolve to the world of Tchiyas HaMeisim and Olam HaBa.